Chapter 10 Mrs. Fosdyke may have been imagining that her teeth felt strange, but she obviously thought she was ill in some way, because she was still in her dressing-gown and slippers when she opened the door. Jack stuck the bunch of flowers straight out toward her before she could even open her mouth, hoping thus to take the wind out of her sails. This strategy, reasonable as it seemed, failed. Mrs. Fosdyke was by now in such a state of nervous agitation that she jumped back when Jack thrust the flowers at her, evidently supposing that they were about to erupt maggots or poisonous fumes. "What's them?" she inquired suspiciously. "They're flowers, Mrs. Fosdyke, for you, from all of us, you know, for appreciation, and all that." Still, she seemed not to respond. Jack, realizing why, buried his nose in the flowers, to demonstrate their innocuousness. "There," he said, coming up for breath. "Smashing. They smell really nice. Here you are, Mrs. Fosdyke." She was still unable to bring herself to take the flowers, but held the door a little wider and said, "Best come in, I suppose. Don't suppose I'm meant to stand in draughts, the state I'm in." "I'm sorry about your not being well," Jack told her truthfully. "We all are. That's why we've sent the flowers, and these are for you as well." He handed over the box of chocolates. It was large and handsome, albeit lacking cellophane. Mrs. Fosdyke had remarked its presence on the sideboard the previous day, but had assumed it was intended for Grandma. She took it, placed it on the table, and regarded the picture on the lid as if looking for some kind of clue. "Do you like them?" Jack asked. "They're a good make, and it's a nice lid." "Very nice," she said at length. She sat down suddenly. "Just having a cup of tea," she told him. "I'll pour you one. Just pass a cup and saucer off that shelf, will you? My legs don't seem up to much today." Jack would normally have declined the offer of tea and conversation with Mrs. Fosdyke, but felt that today this would be part of his duty as ambassador. Also, he was somewhat alarmed to hear that Mrs. Fosdyke's legs were apparently going the same way as her teeth. He probed for further details. "You were run off your legs yesterday, I expect," he said, placing his cup and saucer before her. "I'm always run off my legs," Mrs. Fosdyke told him. "Nothing new in that. It's their being all of a shock and tremble I don't like." "I'm really sorry about your legs, Mrs. Fosdyke," Jack told her. From then on he kept taking looks to see if he could detect signs of shaking and trembling in her nether limbs. If he could, he supposed it would mean quite a serious illness, like palsy in the Bible. On the other hand, he did not think that the family reunion, cataclysmic as it had been, would have been sufficient to bring on the palsy. "Gone, have they?" inquired Mrs. Fosdyke. Jack, knowing whom she meant, nodded. "And that's no wonder," she observed, "though, mind you, they're not what they were. The reverend gentleman's nice enough, but now they've all gone on to the vegetables, they're not what they were. It makes you wonder if it's something in the blood." "What is?" Jack asked, thinking she had gone off at a tangent and was describing another of her symptoms. "Being a Bagthorpe." "Oh." Jack did not quite know what to say to this. He did not wish to sit and hear his family maligned, but on the other hand he was very keen to fulfill his mission of buttering up Mrs. Fosdyke and getting her back into operation again as soon as possible. "Why don't you have a chocolate?" he suggested diplomatically. "I haven't had my breakfast," she said. "You don't eat chocolates before breakfast." "But it's gone 12 now," Jack pointed out. "Even if you haven't had any breakfast, I don't think that gone 12 counts as before breakfast." He felt he was handling the debate very well, and Mrs. Fosdyke certainly seemed to concede that he had made some kind of point. "Might as well," she said. "What it don't do for my teeth, it might do for my legs." As it turned out, no chocolate was about to do anything for any part of Mrs. Fosdyke's anatomy. Within 30 seconds of the lid of the box being raised, Jack found himself outside the house, the door slammed, and could hear Mrs. Fosdyke screaming on the other side. "Oh, oh, oh!" she screamed, as if she thought that screaming long and loud enough would actually achieve something. She told her cronies later in the fiddler's arms that she had really, at that moment, feared for her own sanity. "I remember thinking while I was screaming," she told them, "that I could hear myself screaming, just as if it was somebody else, and I was outside of myself, if you see what I mean." Madames Bates and Pye nodded sagely, and the latter intelligently remarked that this was probably what was meant by the expression, "being beside yourself." "That's what you were, Glad," she told her. "Beside yourself. It's horrible." Jack himself reported back to his siblings that he thought Mrs. Fosdyke really might be having a nervous breakdown. "And you can't really blame her," he said. His picture of what had happened was only fragmentary, but he had seen the box of chocolates fly up and fall, as if in slow motion, in a shower of large, white maggots. "They were bigger than the maggots at Grandma's party," he told them. "Miles bigger. They must have been eating the chocolates." "Gosh!" Rosie was impressed. She had been impressed by the original maggots. "There's no need to ask who put 'em there, of course," William said grimly. There was not. They could all well imagine what had, in fact, happened, and this was later confirmed by Daisy herself. "I didn't want all the dear little maggots to die of that horrid smell," she sobbed. "I saved them." She had eaten 6 of the chocolates, she said, to make room for her salvaged pets. "I made all little nice nests where the chocolates were," she told them. "They looked really comfy." She then swiftly reversed the situation by demanding accusingly, "Why did you give my maggots to Mrs. Fozzie? They were my maggots. I saved them. Now I haven't got no maggots." "You're crazy," William told her. "Hopeless, I ask you." Daisy began to sob afresh, and Rosie rounded on William and Tess, the latter having been equally scathing about Daisy's humane treatment of the maggots. "Shut up," she told them. "Leave her alone. She's sweet. She only meant to be kind. It was your fault, sending Fozzie those chocolates. You weren't trying to be kind. You were just trying to get her back to do all the work, and now she won't come back, not ever, and it'll serve you right." This speech had a sobering effect, if only because it contained the now patent truth that Mrs. Fosdyke was indeed unlikely ever to cross the Bagthorpe threshold again. "Mother'll just have to find someone else," Tess said at last. "She won't be able to," Jack said. "Fozzie tells tales about us in the village. She makes out we're awful and mad." "That's true," Tess conceded. "Mother would have to advertise nationally and get someone who has never heard of us." "Which won't be easy," William pointed out, "considering all the adverse publicity we've been getting lately." They moodily turned the matter over in their heads. "There's only one thing," William said at last. "We'll have to make a final bid to get Fozzie back." "You can," Jack told him. "I'm not." "She does like us, in a way," William continued. "She must, or she wouldn't have stayed as long as she has. The first thing is, Daisy must write a letter of apology." Daisy stopped sniffing and brightened up. "Shall I write on the wall, you mean?" she asked. "You write on a wall," William told her, "and I'll skin you alive. You write a proper letter on proper paper, and in your best writing." "Yes, Willem," said Daisy meekly. Rosie was ordered to take Daisy off, give her some paper, and stand over her while she wrote the letter. Half an hour later, Daisy reappeared, triumphantly waving her missive. It read, "Dear Miss Fozzie, I am sorry you got my maggots in your chocolates, and please can I have them back because I really love them and can play with them instead of brothers and sisters, because Mummy says I can't have any brothers and sisters. I hope your teeth is better, and we all really and truly love you, we really do, and really mean it that we love you. Daisy." William cast a weary eye over this communication, and said that in his view it contained far too much of the word really, which sounded, he said, like protesting too much. Jack pointed out that it would look even worse if the protestations of love were struck out, and it was decided that the letter should stand. "Though that won't fetch Fozzie back," Jack told them. "You didn't see the size of those maggots, and you didn't hear her screeching. It'll take more than that. If we are ever to win fame, William said, and I mean quick fame, before the DB do, we must think of something more than that. They all thought, with the possible exception of Daisy, who did not really appreciate the seriousness of the situation and was probably still thinking about maggots. She announced her intention of going up to see Grandma, whom Mr. Bagthorpe had not managed to vacuum out of her room. What would make Fozzie happy in the whole world? Jack wondered out loud. They pondered in silence. Mrs. Fosdyke did not talk a lot about happiness. They did not, they realized, know what was her dearest wish, even were they able to grant it.